Welcome to All Over the Map. Take chances and ask questions.
Open discussion on all topics. The driving force. Get her done. Laughter is medicine for the soul. It's a small world after all.
I'm extremely grateful to welcome our next guest to All Over the Map, Garrett McFadden. Just a little background information about this compassionate individual before we kick things off. Garrett left home at age 16 to play for the Guelph Storm of the OHL, where he played 5 years respectively, winning the OHL championship as a 16-year-old. For the last 2 years, playing for the Storm, he took the honor of being the captain of his team, leading by example, always wearing his heart on his jersey, on and off the ice, and what I truly believe matters the most when you're in this public eye. Garrett started McFadden's Movement in September 2016, which is a non-for-profit organization in support of mental health that strives to change, help, and develop mental health among athletes starting at the grassroots level. We'll let Garrett speak about his passion for helping others himself. But I think it's important to note that since the start of the movement, he has been hosted by various minor hockey teams, as well as schools where he has introduced his personal introduction to mental health and the obstacles he's faced both on and off the ice. He's partnered up with the Canadian Mental Health Association, and since the inception of McFadden Movement, he's helped to raise over $50,000 and counting for mental health resources. And without further ado, here's the interview with Garrett McFadden. All right, so let's might as well break in the audience with a very serious question. So who's your favorite Star Wars character? And if you say Chewbacca, then we definitely have a lot in common.
Chewbacca is definitely out there. I don't know. I didn't mind I like Luke Skywalker. Yeah. How can you not? And then I don't know. I always like R2-D2. I thought he was pretty cool.
Nice. All right. So, okay, my man, I want to hear all about the backstory of your foundation that focuses on mental health and obviously educating the people on the topic.
Yeah. For me, I guess it was, going into my fourth year of junior, I kind of, was involved a lot in just our community efforts, I think, within the organization. Like, it's just, from the moment I got there, like there was always stuff going on with the fans and all that stuff. And they kept us busy, away from the rink. And I think just, having the opportunity to do that, like at 16, I really enjoyed it. And, I kept trying to get as involved as I could, with all our community stuff. And then just kind of, leading up to the start of my fourth year, in Guelph, we were kind of just brainstorming ideas on, what to do and where to go and how, if we can make anything, better. And, I kind of pitched the idea to Steph Karate, who helps me out as like co-founder of McFadden's Movement. Just the idea of doing something for mental health and, kind of took off from there. We had a bunch of meetings, to kind of figure out what exactly we wanted to do. And I started, basically just, going in, talking to teams, talking to like young athletes and stuff like that. Originally sort of just hockey teams. And I'd pop into the rink after one of their practices or something like that. And, just talk a little bit about my experience and, my time in the OHL. And then also, we lost a close family friend, Wes Cameron, to suicide when I was in grade 9. So, it's one of those things that, it's taken off from there and we've definitely, changed, the types of things that we're doing. And I think my talk that I go in and do changes all the time too, just with, the world and how I feel and stuff like that. And, it keeps things definitely interesting for me. And I think that the kids get a lot from it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there's a huge paradigm shift going on right now, in regards to the stigma of mental health. And it's a lot of these, young guys, such as yourself that, are kind of pioneering the way, you know, with things that you do, you know, the compassion that you actually have towards other people because of your own personal journey. And I think, you know, it takes a lot of courage to actually step up and give that back. And so I'm really proud of you for doing that, man. Do you miss what I was going to say is let's hear about your personal journey and challenges of leaving home at the age of 16. That's a pretty tender age.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it was, you know, I hadn't even turned 16 yet. I'm a late August birthday. So I I moved to Guelph. Yeah, just before my 16th birthday. I didn't have my driver's license or anything like that. And, you know, it was one of those things like when I got drafted, I kind of knew, you know, I'd be moving out. I was a first round pick to Guelph. And it was like one of those days where I was super excited. And at the same time, I was like, oh my God, like, you know, everything is like approaching really quickly. And, you know, there's big change coming. And, you know, my first year was pretty difficult, I'd say. Like I, you know, I didn't adjust amazingly. I didn't really play too much my first year either. Like, I think, you know, I played probably 34 or 35 games before Christmas time. So, you know, I was in the lineup a lot, and then I went to, I played in the U17, hockey challenge in Cape Breton. And when I came back, I just kind of started getting scratched.
Yeah.
I think I only played like maybe 7 games after Christmas time. We had an unreal team. We made some big trades that brought in a lot of like veteran guys. And, I just kind of found myself on the outside looking in, and it was tough because, you know, I believed that I was like, you know, a great player, and I thought I was going to come in and like have this immediate impact, but you kind of realize like quickly when you go from playing on your midget team, you know, half the game, like I'm a defenseman. So it was like, I'd be playing 30 minutes or whatever I could. And it's like, now you're playing, you know, sparingly and, you know, maybe you're clocking 10 minutes a night, and half the time you wouldn't even play in the third period or whatever. So it was a, you know, an adjustment, I think, at the rink, on the ice too, for sure. And then also outside the rink, just like going to a new high school and trying to meet all new friends and, you know, along with you're trying to sort yourself out, figure yourself out. And you're growing up quick. And I think it's, you know, it was a tough first year for me, like no doubt.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really give you much of a choice. That's the thing, is you get kind of almost like thrown out to the wolves. I know that's how I felt. And, you know, you kind of get overwhelmed or trying to fit in. And, you know, there's a huge gap there too, you know, between the ages of 16 to 20, you know, there's, and sometimes the 20-year-olds are looking at the 16-year-olds and thinking, you know, there's not a jealousy factor, but, you know, they see the young guys coming in and, you know, you're trying to fit in and, you know, but, you know, at the end of the day, everything kind of, you know, works out for, you know, for a reason. There's a lot of lessons that we learn along the way. And, you know, obviously being a captain of the team, you know, a few years later, and you put up some great numbers there too, man. So, you know, you're obviously well respected in the community, and that's obviously what I think matters the most. So, what was it like winning the Memorial Cup your first year in the OHL?
Well, yeah, I mean, we won the OHL that year. We made it to the Memorial Cup final. We didn't win. But yeah, I mean, winning the OHL was really cool. I didn't play a single game in the playoffs, but I was like, you know, one of the black aces. And, you know, by then it was kind of like, I'd show up to the rink every day and just try and make things fun for the guys. And, there was, you know, a few of us that were kind of in the same situation. So we, you know, worked hard together and, you know, did kind of our own thing and, you know, took it all in. And it was, you know, I was so lucky to be on that team and to play with some of those guys. Like, you know, there's a ton of NHL players that have come from that junior team, which is, you know, crazy to think about now. And, it was such a cool experience. And then, yeah, going to the Memorial Cup was just like, you know, you felt like you're on a different planet kind of thing. Like, you know, I don't think we went to school for like 3 weeks after we won. And it was like, you know, we're showing up to the rink and sports nets everywhere and you're wearing shorts and it's summertime and everything just like, you know, was feeling Feeling awesome. I had a lot of fun. Yeah, exactly. It was on top of the world. And I don't know, you're kind of, yeah, here. We were in, it was in London. So it was pretty cool, like the Unreal City. And yeah, we had a lot of fun there. It was pretty, it was a lot to take in as a young kid. But yeah, I definitely had a lot of fun.
So I guess that probably leads into my next question. Like, you know, did you miss your friends back home that first year? And like, were you one of the lucky ones that had a nice host family that made you feel at home and comfortable?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had unreal billets, like the Bowmans. They had two young kids, Nathan and Caitlin. When I moved in there, Nathan was 5 and Caitlin was 7. Now I was there for 5 years. So I watched them grow up. And when I moved out of there, it was kind of like my younger billet brother there, Nathan, I'd been around for half his life. So it's kind of, you know, it's crazy to think about like the impact that I guess I would have had on their young lives and, you know, growing up with them and, you know, it was, I have a younger brother, so I'm already an older brother and I know what that's all about, but they're, you know, a lot younger and, you know, there's
so they probably looked up to you a lot. And then,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. And they were, you know, they're a lot of fun and they're really great kids. I miss them a ton. I haven't seen them in a long time with the pandemic and all that stuff going on, but
we'll have to make sure to, send this episode out to them. And
yeah, for sure. Oh, I'm sure they'll be watching. Cool. They stay pretty close. So that's, they were awesome. And I think, the transition every year, like moving there and then moving back home and trying to kind of get your feet back under you. Like by the time I moved back in my first year, I think it was the start of June.
Yeah.
So there was like, you know, 3 or 4 weeks left in school. So it was, you know, the teachers are kind of like, they don't understand it, but at that point it's like, I've been away for like 8 months. Like I just want to go home. You know, the last thing that I really am thinking about is like how well I'm going to transition back into my, you know, grade 11 biology class. Like it wasn't something that I was too concerned about, but I had a good group of friends back home who, also kind of transitioned into junior and into that stage. So we'd all kind of come back at the same time. And, so we'd all be, you know, juggling around our classes and stuff like that. But it's one of those things where you're so happy to get back after the long season that, you know, even if it's a little hard at high school or hard to kind of settle back in with your old friends. It all works out.
It does. I think a lot of people don't understand from, you know, the outside looking in, you know, how difficult it is sometimes when your coach is like, you got to go to school the next day. You're coming in from a long road trip the night before. You get maybe an hour and a half of sleep in. And I know in many instances, I found myself back in the day, I'd be like sleeping on my desk like this, you know, but, you know, lucky enough, sometimes the hockey players got treated a little bit with extra benefits and let off the hook, so to speak. And a lot of the teachers actually, you know, went to the games and watched you played. So it was, you know, I believe we're all equal at the end of the day. But sometimes we, some hockey players, athletes, celebrities, they get put up on this pedestal. But what people have to realize is that, you know, we're all just human beings. And, you know, we're all just seekers and striving for, you know, just try to be the best person we can possibly be in the present moment, you know? Yeah. So, did you ever experience any hazing or damaging, rituals during your junior career? Like, and, if so, how did that affect your psyche?
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky. We had really great vets and, you know, we had our things that we had to do, clean the bus and, you know, pick up pucks after practice and stuff like that. But it was all, you know, there was nothing that I would say was ever, you know, hazing or ever, you know, made us feel, you know,
less like, than,
like, yeah, less than, yeah. Less than them. And, I'll always say this and I feel it 100% is that the culture that I came into in Guelph was, a pretty special one and super lucky to come in as a young kid to like a team gearing up for a championship. And, you know, they were kind of focused on those things and like showing up to the rink every day and doing the right thing. And, I think that definitely helped in terms of they weren't as hard on us and, you know, we kind of did our own thing and there was a ton of guys that helped us out and I think that's, you know, the direction that the league is headed. And, you know, since I came in as a 16-year-old, they've done a lot of different anti-hazing policies and stuff like that. And I think they've got a pretty good hold on everything that goes on. And I think that, you know, people just understand that it's just not acceptable anymore. And, you know, it's something that, you know, in my time in Guelph, I am, you know, confident in saying that nothing like that ever happened. And, you know, I think that a lot of it has to do with culture and, you know, how each group follows the next. And, like I said, I was lucky to come in as a rookie and have a bunch of guys who, you know, were, you know, more positive about us than maybe others. And that definitely helped. And I think that sets the tone for later generations and for other players that come in. And, you know, when 16-year-olds become 19 and 20-year-olds, if they were treated poorly, then they're going to, you know, maybe take it out on some younger guys. And if they're treated pretty fairly, then I think you kind of see that correlation. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure you've seen, you know, a lot of what's going on, you know, on the CBC and, you know, the media these days of, you know, certain players. I'm not going to name them, but, you know, with, you know, the hockey culture way back, you know, how it's affected them so much, you know, with the trauma that's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, I firmly believe that there's absolutely no room in the game of hockey or any sport, you know, to treat people in, you know, in a negative way that would make them feel less than, you know, mm-hmm. being part of a team is, you know, teamwork, you know, and teamwork does, I mean, I, in my humble opinion, truly makes the dream work. And you should know that obviously, you know, going to the, you know, OHL final and having success and whatnot. And, you know, it's all about harmony at the end of the day. It doesn't matter what you do. You know, it's all about camaraderie and just respect, you know, really treating people with respect at the end of the day. So, knowing your character and integrity, did you ever participate in any of these rituals? And, you know, as a veteran player, obviously, and did you feel that it was your duty as a leader to try to put a stop to some of the madness that maybe went on behind the scenes of, you know, say the glitz and glamour that a local celebrity such as yourself, you know, at the time was, you know, going through. So, but, you know, you kind of answered that one question that it wasn't so bad. But were you one of the guys that was, you know, kind of, you know, keep a stronghold on, you know, making sure, you know, younger guys are being treated well with respect and accepted?
Yeah, absolutely too. And I think that, for me, obviously, like I struggled a lot when I was 16.
Yeah.
And you know, when I sit back and think about it, you know, how the guys treated me, which was, you know, they were awesome to me, and, you know, I still struggled. So it was just kind of one of those things that I always thought about, like, you know, what if I had a hard time when, and there was a lot of hazing going on. And then one, I was struggling cause I wasn't playing and I was upset about that. And then two, having, you know, your teammates come down on you and, you know, having to do stuff or, you know, being treated poorly by the older guys, like it wouldn't help. And so that's something that, like, you know, we tried to, you know, have none of that and make sure that, you know, we were, the young guys always felt comfortable. For me, like, the older I got, the younger our team seemed. Like, my second year in the league, we still had a pretty, pretty veteran team. But then my third year in Guelph, I think we were the youngest team by far. I think we had, you know, 9 or 10 16-year-olds. So
wow.
It's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, these kids are, if we're going to pick on them and, you know, treat them poorly, then we're just going to be we're not going to be a good team.
Exactly.
Because they make up half of our team. So it's just like, it just makes no sense to, you know, you want them to succeed. And we had a lot of guys come in, you know, that were pretty high profile and pretty high draft picks. Like my third year, we had my fourth year, we had Ryan Merkley, who was the first overall pick, come in. And, you know, he was an unbelievable player. And it was just like, you know, if you wanted to have success, then you wanted to make sure that guy was, you know, feeling right at the rink and comfortable and stuff like that, because he's one of our best players. So,
yeah,
it was something that I think, as you know, the leadership groups that I was a part of, for sure, we, you know, tried to make the young guys feel as comfortable as possible. And I think that helped to kind of, you know, make it, more normal to just, you know, everyone respect everyone, and nobody should feel like they're lesser just because of what year they are in the league. And I think it worked out pretty well for us.
That's awesome. Yeah. I know, when you go on, you search your name on Google, a lot of photos come up, you know, if you giving back, you know, to the foundation. And, you know, that's really what sparked my interest in you is, you know, the fact that, you know, you're passionate about giving back to the game, not just the game, but people in general, that and that you've been able to raise money, you know, for the cause. And, you know, what better cause, you know, especially at this point of the game, you know, it's of utmost paramount, I think, you know, that, you know, people's mental stability is, you know, balanced, so to speak, because it can get out of whack there. And, you know, the ramifications, obviously, we've both lost people to suicide. And, you know, there's been a lot of suicides in the NHL as well in, you know, in the past years. And it just breaks my heart, you know, when you see wonderful guys, you know, that, you know, full of, you know, full of life and, you know, hilarious guys that, you know, you become close with. And the next thing you know that, you know, it's, you know, they're kind of hiding behind a mask and, you know, hiding their depression, hiding, you know, these feelings. And it's pretty awesome that a guy like you can actually be so open about it, which opens up, you know, other people to be transparent about their own mental health journeys. So, yeah. So in your viewpoint, what is your point on coaches that try to motivate by intimidation and not motivation? I know a lot of players who lost the love of the game because in many cases they were scared of their coach and other players on their team.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's such a fine line, I would say, between the two, right? It's I think obviously that coaches who are there to motivate you and are, you know, you can feel comfortable around, they're going to get the most out of their players. Like, that's my belief for sure. And, you know, one day when I hopefully become a coach and, you know, that's kind of, you know, that's the style of coaching that I want to, you know, bring to the team that I'm coaching or whatever. And, you know, I think, that, you know, the style of intimidation coaching is, you know, old school. And I think it's, you know, sort of being pushed out of the game, which is a good sign for the mental health of hockey players. Absolutely. And athletes. And I think it's, you know, it'll help people to, you know, be able to reach higher levels of success. And I think, you know, programs or teams or, you know, junior clubs that can sort that out and realize that, you know, highly motivated players are, you know, going to be the more successful ones. And they're also going to look better on the organization as a whole. And they're going to be more successful individually and then as a team too. So it's just like, yeah, for me, it's, you know, I was lucky to have a lot of, you know, motivational coaches who use that style and, you know, who were what I guess we would call player coaches and guys that, you know, you always felt like you could show up on their doorstep with anything and they'd help you out. So I was pretty lucky. And in junior, I had I had four different coaches in 5 years. But all that, you know, would do whatever they could for you. And in terms of, you know, other management and stuff like that, like Mike Kelly was our GM, for my first 4 years in Guelph. And like he would, you know, he'd pick us up for school every morning and drive us to school. And he'd pick us up from, you know, he'd take you anywhere and he'd do anything for you. And he'd give you his last dime was kind of the way I think about Mike Kelly. So, yeah, like, you know, those types of people are the people that you kind of, you know, you want to hold on to in hockey. And, but you know, there unfortunately is some people that, you know, that's not their style. And I think it definitely shows and can definitely take the love out of the game for some people. And it's unfortunate, but like I said, I think it's kind of on the way out of the game, which is a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. So knowing that you're a natural born leader, how did it feel when you were named captain of the Guelph Storm? And, did you feel any added pressure with the C stitched to your jersey?
You know, it was a big honor for me. You know, I I'd always just been an assistant captain. I had never been like a full captain, not on any team that I ever played for. So, you know, it's one of those things that like I believed in myself, and I think I try to show up to the rink every day and do the right things. And, you know, that I wasn't going to change, you know, how I felt about that and what I was doing on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, I learned from a lot of great leaders, you know, from before me. Matt Finn was our captain in my first year, and he was kind of the, you know, he was like one of the greatest leaders I've ever played with. And he was just one of those guys that he electrified a room, and he also made you feel really comfortable. And I think he brought people together, and it was, you know, something that I learned from him that, you know, he wouldn't pass by anyone at the rink without saying hi and asking how they were. And, you know, my second year we had Jason Dickinson, who's, you know, in Dallas right now, yeah, battling for the cup. So
who's going to win the cup this year?
Well, I hope for Dallas.
Yeah.
I hope for Dallas, but I mean, obviously Tampa's a pretty unreal
team. They got an unreal team. I was actually talking to one of my buddies that played for the Lightning yesterday, and I called Tampa in five, and he called seven about a week ago. So anyways, I think it could go seven games. Who knows? But it's kind of strange watching no fans in the building, eh?
It is. Yeah. It's weird. Anyways.
But
yeah, I mean, Jason, he was an unreal leader too. So I was just lucky to be, you know, learn from a few guys that were great leaders. And from there, I guess just it made me feel like, you know, less pressure just because I knew how they did it and I knew how successful they were. And, you know, I kind of took things that I liked that they had in their leadership styles and tried to kind of incorporate and put my own spin on it. And, you know, I think I did a pretty good job.
Well, it's like the old saying goes, you're the sub and substance of the five people that you associate yourself with the most. So, you know, everything being, you know, energy, so to speak, you know, being around that positive energy kind of ignites that spark from within and propels you forward into, you know, wanting to do well and feeling good about yourself and the people that you're surrounded by. So that's pretty cool, man. So what was the worst injury that you ever sustained while playing hockey? And did you ever take any big blows to the head, any concussions, and how many were diagnosed?
Yeah, I'm sure I've had a few concussions. I don't think any have been diagnosed, but I, you know, I'm not a big guy. I'm a, you know, smaller puck moving defenseman. So the odd time, you know, I get caught in the trolley tracks and put myself in, in a bad position.
Smaller guy with a big heart.
I've had a few good ones the last couple of years. I did my MCL Christmas time last year, which was a bit of a bummer. And when I played over in Russia, we were in Siberia for like the university FISU games kind of thing. I separated my shoulder over there, and that was pretty bad one. And just being in Siberia was made it all the more strange, and flying home with my arm in a sling and whatever.
How's it feeling now?
Feels pretty good now. Yeah. A lot of rehab, but I mean, it doesn't look the same when you look at it in the mirror, but it's one of those things that you kind of get used to. So the odd night I'll sleep on it wrong and it hurts in the morning.
I'll have to send you something. I had a torn rotator cuff, and 3 months ago, the doctor told me that I needed surgery on it. And I've been really lucky. Well, I would say blessed. I met a wonderful Aboriginal lady in the Okanagan here, and she makes this medicine. It's actually there's CBD that's in the cream, and she said just apply it 4 times a day. You don't need surgery. And I was like, I can't even move my arm past my shoulder.
Yeah.
And within a month, I have full mobility again, and that's actually crazy. Get back in the gym and actually feel good. Like, my body's not completely broken down, but, so what has the game of hockey taught you about life in general?
Oh man, that's I could go on forever. Like when I was a young kid, it was like, you know, time management and, you know, just, I think doing their, you know, being like a good person. I mean, like you just want to, I think hockey is huge for, and even any team sport, is just like being a good person. And you realize that like the better teammate you are, and you know, the more selfless you are, then, you know, the more more people will be gravitated towards you, and you know, will, you know, you feel more united and more like a team. And you know, obviously there's the intangibles and stuff that you learn, you know, you're learning every day. And I think, like I said, like from a young age and driving to practice and doing all that stuff, and you're trying to do homework in the car. And, you know, it was the same thing when I was in Guelph, and you move to junior and you still have homework. And then, you know, now I go to university and play hockey. So it's, you know, I would say it's just like managing everything, like managing your emotions, managing your time, managing, like, you know, what you're putting in your body. It's like you learn so much from the game. Just, I think about yourself too. And then on top of that, it's just, yeah, being a good teammate is probably like one of the best things that I guess hockey has kind of taught me.
Yeah. Gives you a lot of fulfillment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in your mind, what defines a good leader? You know, so many people, for instance, a player like Sidney Crosby, or in my era, you know, a guy like Steve Yzerman led more by action than words. Were you a vocal guy on and off the ice? Or, you know, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm more of like a lead by example type. I feel like I bring my work belt to practice every day and to the rink. And like I said, just kind of do the right things. And I'm not afraid to, you know, speak up, and I enjoy saying what I think needs to be said and when. And you know, I obviously don't want to overkill it, and you don't want to be bugging anyone and trying to, you know, maybe overcompensate for things that are going on. But yeah, I think like
don't tell people what to do, show them what to do.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, it's a huge part of leadership is obviously sometimes shutting your mouth and getting the work done. And you know, I think the best way to, you know, show that you're a leader is by what you can, you know, get done, whether it's
getting her done and having fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, that's
right on. So what's your advice to all the kids that have dreams and aspirations of making a living from sports? And obviously talent only takes an individual so far, right? So
yeah, for me, like growing up, it was always just about having fun. And, you know, I was pretty lucky to have really good parents who, you know, weren't shy to express that if I was ever not enjoying something, that, you know, I should not do it. And, you know, it's one of those things that the game is getting so serious at such a young age. And, you know, the more resources and the more training methods and the more skill sessions and all that stuff is, you know, it's great. And I think it's great for the growth of the game, but at the same time, it can be overkill, especially for kids at a young age. Yeah. So yeah. I think just, you know, the reason that I still play hockey and the reason that I want to play in the NHL one day, or I want to play pro, is because I love hockey and like, it's my passion. And, you know, it's what I wake up every day and I want to do. So it's one of those things that if I didn't feel that way about hockey, like I probably, you know, I wouldn't be playing, because I don't think that it would be fun if I wasn't, you know, so passionate about it that I feel like it's, you know, it's like my purpose. I want to wake up every day, go to the rink, and, you know, I want to get enough sleep. I want to train. I want to be in good shape so that I can, you know, be the best version of myself on the ice. So.
Nothing better than being in hockey shape. I was having that conversation with another friend the other day. You know, it's you can go to the gym all you want, you can run all you want, but you know, strapping a pair of blades on there, and you know, it's you know, when you get into that flow there, I mean, I don't think there's anything like it. It's it's a good feeling. You know, yeah, releases those natural endorphins, and you can't wait to get back on there again.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're probably one of those guys that was the last guy on the ice, eh?
Well, I try to, you know, stay out there for as long as I can. I mean, it's now that you got schoolwork and stuff like that. And I don't know, I mean, I'm a student now, so I got to go home and cook my own dinner. And it's, you know, when I was in Guelph, I'd try and stay at the rink for as long as I could and soak it all in. And then it'd be nice, I'd get back to my billets, and my billet mom was an unreal cook. So there'd be, you know, an unreal meal waiting for me, and get to hang out with the kids all night. But yeah, I mean, for me, I love the game. I love like getting to the rink early. I love you know, being one of the last to leave all the time. So it's, you know, it's kind of my, you know, definitely my happy place. I like to spend a lot of time there. So I've been really missing it over the pandemic. It's been pretty tough. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been tough for a lot of people, man. It's, I, you know, I was maybe just one of the millions that called it right off the bat that, you know, people that suffer from addiction issues and mental health issues, obviously their go-to is isolation. And, you know, people are unfortunately going through some, you know, very challenging times. You know, antidepressants and all that kind of stuff are on the uprise. I was actually talking to a pharmacist last week. They said that antidepressants and, you know, sedatives and whatnot, they've got, they're up on the right up to 30% now in the last 8 months, they've gone up. So, you know, I'm all about the natural way of, you know, healing, you know, what's your take on that? You know, going the chemical way, big pharma, or, you know, tackling it with the health training, exercise and positivity, you know, but
100% that way. I mean, it's like, and for us too, as a, you know, and what we do with McFadden's Movement is like, we're big on talking and expressing how you feel to people. And, along with that, just like carrying a positive attitude. And I think that's something that like I learned from my time in the OHL was the days that I felt my worst were because I wasn't focusing on all the good. So, you know, just trying to, you know, teach the kids that, and that's, you know, kind of what I go with when I'm having a bad day or, you know, I'm in a, feel like I'm in a bit of a slump, which has been, you know, a lot lately, which kind of sucks, but, it's one of those things that there's still a lot of good, that you can focus on. And the more that you can kind of draw that out and do things that make you happy, then, you know, the better off.
I call them ants. Yeah. Automatic negative thoughts. And so unfortunately they inject themselves willingly, and the positives need to be injected by us, you know, and then we can set up that outer guard to the subconscious. And, you know, eventually, you know, when we keep, you know, pounding those, you know, positive affirmations in, you know, we set up that outer guard so the negatives aren't, you know, injecting themselves in so much, and we can, you know, kind of, you know, life's not so much like this, and it's more like this, you know. So so who was your favorite player growing up, and why?
Oh man, I had a few. When I was younger, I really liked Gary Roberts on the Leafs. I was a big Matt Sundin fan. Like, I'm like a Leafs fan diehard. My dad,
great guy, Matt. I've been a few years back in Whistler and had wonderful gentleman.
Yeah, he was Matt's was definitely one of my favorite all time for sure. And just grew up watching him. There's a pretty good story from when I was younger, and Sweden was playing Canada at the Olympics, and I was cheering for Sweden because Mats Sundin was on there, and I think my dad wasn't too impressed with that. But
is that 2010?
Probably I can't remember. I was just a young kid, but I love Mats Sundin. He's pretty fun to watch. I loved Ed Belfour too. Like, I love all like those old Leafs,
like the old school boys,
classic, man. The old school boys. But I mean, I like watching Ryan Ellis play. I think he's an unreal player. Like, as I got older and you know, as well, I'm more interested in the World Juniors and stuff like that, just like watching that guy work the power play up top. And you know, he's kind of a smaller guy, so I try to kind of emulate him when I go out there and, you know, play hockey and do that. But, you know, he's one of my probably favorite to watch lately. So.
Right on, man. Yeah. So many good players these days. I mean, the game has changed so much, you know, God, the skill set with some of these guys is just like, I mean, you say, who's the best player in the game today? You know, you got like 10 to choose from or 20 to choose from. It's like, I mean, I think that all comes down to like hockey specific training. I mean, I never had that growing up. Our summers were spent, you know, kind of having fun. And then 2 weeks before training camp, we might do some stairs and a little bit of weights, you know, but now if you're not given or 12 months out of the year, you know, taking little breaks maybe, but you know, it's a full-time job now, or else, and all the politics that go into it with the agents and whatnot, there's a lot of pressure on these guys still, you know, actually achieving the end goal, if it's the NHL or if it's just playing junior and, you know, getting an education to be a coach. There's so much that plays into those factors.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's, you know, the game's changing. The guys are, it's pretty unreal to watch how skilled the league is getting. And I think it'll continue that way. That's the trending way. So, you know, guys are becoming better puck handlers, better skaters, and it makes the game fast and exciting to watch. So I think hockey's in a really good place right now, and it's exciting to watch. Like you said, like there's 10 guys that you could debate on who's the best, and it all, you know, matters on who's playing tonight and who's you know, stealing the show.
Who do you think's the best right now? Best defenseman, best forward?
Well, I cannot say McDavid. I played against the guy when I was in junior, and it's just like to watch him do that kind of stuff to NHL defensemen is just insane.
Yeah, he's ridiculously sick with the puck.
Yeah,
his speed is just unreal. I mean, the guy is next level, absolutely next level. What was it? So playing against him in junior, was it just, I mean, almost
unsafe? Yeah, he was just different, like, because we're the same age. So when I came into the OHL as a 16-year-old, he had already been exceptional status, and, you know, he was like working on his first of whatever 200 or 300 point seasons, and it's just like, this guy is just unbelievable. And then it's like trying to think where I'm at. You know, I thought I was a pretty good player as a 12th overall pick, and I'm coming in and like, this guy is, you know, he's off to the World Juniors, and you know, it's just like, it's pretty unbelievable. And you know, he's putting people in seats, and you know, there's the Erie Otters are coming into Guelph, and there's more people booing and on at Connor McDavid than there are cheering for us when we score and stuff. So no, he was a lot of fun to play against. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, he lit us up a few times. So,
I think he lights everybody up a few times.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just nice that, you know, it happened to me a few times when I was playing against him, and now he goes and does it to NHL defensemen. So it's just like, oh man. Like and I'm sure, you know, he's gotten way better since his time in the OHL, and it's pretty cool to watch him every year, just, you know, putting up 5 or 6 points a night. It's like, oh my God, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's and him and Draisaitl are both sick. Patty Kane, you know, so many good players these days. Yeah. So fighting has always been part of the game. Do you think it is a part of the game that should be removed? I know it's not as prevalent as it used to be, but obviously it's a game that's run high on emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think where fighting is at now, and I would say, like, as you, if you, you know, took an analytical view at it, like the fighting has gone way down. And I think when I first started playing in the OHL, there was like a 10 fight max, and by the time I left, it was like a 3 fight max a year. So it's you know, in terms of junior, I don't like it. It's, you know, there's a maybe a fight. And I think, you know, in my first couple of years, it wasn't as surprising to see a fight. And then, you know, by my fourth and fifth year, if there was a fight in a game, it, you know, usually required, you know, a lot. Someone had to do something pretty, you know, or their emotions were running pretty high. So I think it's something that I don't know if it'll ever be taken right out of the game. But I think that, you know, being able to have it in the game is, you know, it's good and bad. And I think, you know, obviously the injuries that come from it aren't great, but it's one of those things that it's, I don't know, it's part of the game, and it's tough. And you know, it's kind of where it's heading in terms of just less fighting and more of a skilled game. It's, I like that.
It's not so much like going to war anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
In the old days, it was like Gladiator, for crying out loud. It was like ancient Rome sometimes with those bench clearing brawls. You don't see that anymore, which is
I haven't been in too many fights in my career, so I'm not it doesn't really affect what I'm doing out there too much. So it's one of those things. You know, I like a fast skilled game, but I get that, you know, the odd time guys are high on emotions, and it happens.
Well, let's get back to McFadden's movement for a sec here. You know, I think it's important, you know, to talk more about that. And, you know, what advice do you have for anyone suffering from mental health issues, you know, when they feel hopeless and when they're afraid to actually seek help? I was one of those people. I mean,
the afraid part is one of the hardest, and it takes a lot of confidence in yourself to, you know, speak out on your emotions. And I think that's one of the hardest part is, you know, oftentimes, and what we talk about to the kids a lot is, you know, you're feeling these emotions, you gear yourself up to someone who you trust and you say, this is how I feel, this is what's going on with me. And if you don't get the right feedback, then you just fall back into that shell again.
Yeah.
So, you know, we try and really focus on with the kids. If you can go and talk to someone and you don't get the right feedback, then you need to keep trying.
Yeah.
And it's hard, but eventually there's going to be someone who will lead you in the right direction and who'll give you the right advice. And, you know, it's important that you don't give up on yourself. And obviously you probably have a pretty good idea of, you know, the people that you want to talk to and that you're going to get the right feedback from. But, you know, if you don't try and if you don't keep trying to find that feedback, then it's going to be hard to, you know, really, really channel your emotions and sort of figure out, you know, where to go and what to do and kind of the next steps in terms of, you know, getting back on track. So we talked to the kids a lot about that. And like I said, it's for us, it's about promoting positivity and, you know, finding those things that, you know, can help you sort of escape. And, you know, we talk to the kids a lot about finding a passion, whether it's, you know, if they're upset, they go read a book or they go rollerblading or go for a run. Or, you know, we talk a lot about meditation and yoga and how exercise, you know, works well for the brain and, you know, can kind of help clear your mind. So we talk a lot about that stuff. And I think it's all good. And, you know, especially for young kids who are just sort of learning and figuring out what exactly mental health is, just, you know, telling them if they have a bad day, then go outside and shoot 100 pucks and you'll feel better, you know, kind of find that thing that, that helps. And, you know, I think it's a simple way for them to start and a simple way for them to sort of get to feeling better about themselves.
For sure. Yeah. So, at this point in your life, what means the most to you? And, you know, what are your aspirations for the future, brother?
Yeah, well, this year is my last year in school, so
on my degree, and
hopefully get straight A's. Yeah, you know, there's no excuses when it's, you know, online school. You got your resources there, so gotta do that. I've been, you know, I worked pretty hard last year and last few years to get my degree done in 3 years. So I'm excited about that and excited to sort of move on and I want to keep playing hockey. So.
Awesome.
Hopefully move on to pro and kind of, you know, start that part of my career. And, you know, I'm pretty excited about that and feel pretty good about it. Just, you know, going in with a degree and not really worrying about, not so much having a plan B if hockey doesn't work out. And, you know, I think I'll be fine. I think I'll be able to play for quite a while and I'm excited about that. So just kind of, you know, hopefully we get to playing in January when you know the season is sort of looking like we might restart. So I'd like to obviously get one more year in of university hockey and then go from there.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, you went to the Vancouver Canucks training camp, correct?
Yeah, just before I started playing at Acadia. So after my overage year in Guelph, I went out to Vancouver for rookie camp and
my hometown, and, but not my camp. Favorite team. Who's your favorite team?
I'm a Leafs guy. Okay. For sure. Yeah, through and through. Yeah.
Pittsburgh. Mario and Crosby, two favorite players.
Those are two good guys. Thank you.
So, anyways, what's your message to the world in these days of uncertainty? How can we all play our part in solution-based ideas?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I would just say for me, just like keep pushing.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of different emotions that I think I've felt over the last 6 months or whatever it's been. And, it's like you said, it's been hard with the negative thoughts that kind of come into your mind when, you know, you don't feel like you're living your normal life, which is basically, you know, kind of nothing really feels normal as of right now. And, I guess just trying to find those new normals and find those things that are good outlets and, you know, just sort of keep pushing, like I said, and, you know, things are eventually going to sort of normalize and, you know,
the new normal, whatever that is. Yeah,
exactly.
I think it's hard to compartmentalize a lot of like what's going on, because you don't really know what's going on, you know, and every day it's like, okay, there's this going on. And I don't even like to use that word. You know, I know there's two bad C words out there right now, and the second one seems worse than the first one right now. But, you know, I really appreciate your openness. And so how can we follow you with everything? I know you do have an Instagram account and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. I want our audience to really be able to, you know, plug in and tune into, you know, what you're doing, the people that are involved. And, you know, all over the maps, all about exposing good people and personalities that are making contributions to this world in a positive light. So give me the goods. Give our audience the goods.
Sure, my personals are G McFadden 27, and then that's Instagram and Twitter. And then, our McFadden's Movement pages, we have a Twitter account, Facebook, and Instagram, and we do a lot of stuff on there. We have a website, McFaddensMovement.com, with basically all our info about, you know, what we've been up to for the last 4 or 5 years there. And you know, it's a lot of you know, stuff that I'm pretty passionate about there. I'm pretty proud of all the stuff that we put up there. So
yeah, what's your whole take on social media these days? You know,
I like it. I think it's huge. Like I'm you know, I'm not the most active on my own personal ones, but I think, you know, I like having the McFadden's Movement ones just to post about, you know, what I'm passionate about and kind of being able to use it, you know, as a resource to kind of push people to obviously help us raise money for mental health. And also just a reminder of, and, I think it's a good platform to, you know, give a voice, I guess, to myself and, you know, on important days like, you know, Suicide Prevention Day and all that stuff. And also, you know, on top of that, we have our ambassadors program. So a lot of my buddies have, you know, come on board, and it gives them a chance too, to kind of, advocate for something that they're passionate about. And, and I'm obviously happy to be able to share their quotes and, you know, their ideas on our Instagram and our Twitter.
Yeah. It's like the universe is like a well-stocked kitchen of ingredients. Yeah. And, we have the choice, or the choices, you know, to either, you know, we can make a positive influence on those platforms, or, you know, make a negative influence. And I mean, who gives a rat's ass, you know, how many followers you have or this or that, you know, they say that, you know, getting likes and followers releases dopamine and instant gratification and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, to all you people out there that may have, you know, 200, 300 followers, who cares? You know, it's just, you know, lead by example and, you know, just be you. You know, at the end of the day, there is only one you, and that one you is so special. And to express your own unique individuality is, you know, that's just a gift. And, you know, you know, we all go through ups and downs, but if we open up the old blinkers first thing in the morning, there's another chance, another day to create, and you know, just do our best to have fun with life instead of you know, focusing on the negatives. You know, we can really surround ourselves with, you know, positive, like-minded people. That's why I'm so glad that we've been able to connect.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah. So is there anything else you want to give to our audience on a send off here?
Well, just, thanks for having me on, and to the you know, to the listeners, appreciate you listening, and you know, hope that you take a look at our page and what we're doing with McFadden's Movement. And on top of that, just hope everyone knows is getting by, and I hope this, you know, listening to us shoot it has, you know, helped you feel better, or at least, you know, motivated to make a difference in the mental health of yourself or someone in your life. So that's something that I'm pretty passionate about, and I'm happy to be able to share my story.
That's awesome, man. Well, I'm really grateful for our friendship, and thank you so much for being part of all over the map.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, man.